Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Blue Murder Talks. My name's Carrie and I'm your host, and I'm accompanied today by my very good friend and fellow host,
Lauren. Hello, how are you?
Good afternoon, Lauren. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, thank you. Got glorious sunshine. What more can we ask for?
Yeah, it's been hot for about 3 hours today. Yeah. How good is that?
I know. Living my best.
Spot, weren't we?
Yeah. Don't know what happened to my voice then.
Your voice is living its best life. So Blue Murder Talks, obviously we do have a guest today. Sure, we are honoured to be talking today with our friend Leon McLeod. Hello, Leon.
Hello.
Hello.
Don't be honoured. I'm not worthy.
It's because you've got a medal, honoured. Mate. I can't not think of you as a hero.
I still get so much stick at work on the team I'm on now. Because, having just worked at Coronation as well, and we get a medal for that. Yeah, it's basically for like all emergency services.
Nice.
It's not that. It's a thank you thing.
Yeah.
But it's nothing, and I just get so much stick for everyone at work about, oh, it's not like your medal, is it? So. Yeah.
Do you have to wear your medals on your uniform?
I don't. Some people. So you get like little bars, and you can wear that. You wouldn't wear the medal. Plus, it's like really expensive, and I wouldn't want to damage it.
Yeah.
But you could wear the bar, but I don't because I don't want to. It's just not me. Yeah.
So just a bit of an introduction for our listeners. Leon is a policeman.
I am.
And we're talking about Leon's medal because you got a medal off the Queen, didn't you, when she was still alive, for your bravery.
Yeah.
Would you mind telling us, filling us briefly about that, please?
Oh, God.
Just a bit of background.
Oh, so there's me going like, I don't wear the medal, and now it's like I've got a massive ego. So I got a medal, basically it was in relation to kind of my, I can't say response, but just the work I'd done when the London Bridge terror attack happened in 2000 and, Christ, I can't remember what year it was now. 2017, I think?
Yeah, I think it was.
Something like that. Mm. And long story short, I was first on scene and had to, confronted the terrorists, or the attackers, and was involved in kind of evacuating and the kind of immediate first aid of people. Mm. A year maybe afterwards, I kind of got a random letter in the post saying that I was going to get a Queen's Gallantry Medal. So
wow.
That's very random. That was an odd day.
Yes.
It's just a thing.
Yeah.
I've always said it. I'll look back and when I'm not doing this job anymore and when I'm retired and everything else, I'll be like, okay, that was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But at the moment, it's just... Just leave it on the back burner. I don't want to have an ego about it. So it's just like, okay, we'll carry on. But yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's true though. Like you say, you know, when you're older, you probably like reflect. It's like no one can ever take away from you, and it's a really cool thing.
I don't know. No. I'm not going to test that and see if like can they take it off me? What can I get away with? But
I could say let me look at you, Leon, and then run away with it.
Exactly. Oh, all that.
Yeah. And then you see me just walking about with
this old thing.
You can't can't steal off a policeman. You probably get arrested.
There is that.
Got to find you first.
Yeah, so true.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, so thanks for coming on, Leon. That's it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having
in
me.
In person, for once. We're not doing Zoom, so that's handy.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you're going to share some of your true crime anecdotes and, you know, what gets you ticking and that sort of thing. Would you mind, just before we get going, just telling us a little bit about how you became to be a policeman, please?
I can absolutely do that.
Thank
you. It's a weird one. So I wanted to join the police. I've always kind of grown up in, like, London and the outskirts of London and Kent as well. So I kind of got this idea of joining the police when I was, like, 18. When I was doing my A-levels, I didn't really know what else I wanted to do. And I thought, oh, actually, I wouldn't mind doing that. So I did apply and I got rejected, and I can imagine, like, my application would have been terrible. Like, I've told this story before. Like, I would have had no... Like, you have competencies that you have to meet, and I wouldn't have written very well. Like, what I don't know. It was just, it would have been a really bad application. I can imagine they would have read two lines and been like, nah, this is not the one. So that was kind of that. And I was going to apply. You can apply every, like, 9 months later, I think it was. And I was going to wait and then try again. And then I just kind of fell into other work, and I was just kind of, yeah, just getting on with stuff. And the whole idea of being a police officer went out of my head. And then basically, God, how old would I have been? Mid-20s, 20, 26, 27. I was starting to settle down. Was I married then? I think I was married. Yeah, I would have been. And we were looking at, like, you know, buying our first house together, having kids and that. And I just started thinking about, like, what I want to do as a career again. And I toyed around with loads of little things. And then someone, like, I've got friends that are police officers, and just chatting to them, they were like, thought about doing this, and it just all stemmed from there. And really, the second I thought, oh, actually, I'd like to do that, like, I really wanted it. Like, it wasn't a half-hearted effort. Like, I went to a workshop about how you write your application properly and what's kind of required and expected. And yeah, I put a lot of effort into my application. Like, when I ended up doing a lot of it when I was on jury service, weirdly enough. And yeah, like, there was a lot of downtime, so I took a laptop with me and I was doing my application online. And then, yeah, thankfully I got in. So, yeah, like, 2016, I think I joined. And, yeah, here I am now, still enjoying it.
Oh, wow.
Most of the time.
So you only joined a year before the terrorist attacks.
Yeah, I've been in for... Yeah, it was just coming up to two... I think it was... Yeah, it would have been 2 years that I'd been in when that happened, I think.
Wow, yeah. So you're still a bit of...
Coming up to September.
Bit of a newbie.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
I know.
Like, maybe if I'd had all this experience, yes, I would have thought I could do more and messed it up. But nah, yeah, it was. Yeah. I don't know. Clearly, it didn't work against me.
No,
quite
true.
New in service, but yeah.
Oh, wow, cool.
Yes, I was definitely sitting in my probation. I remember that much.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So, yes, obviously they read your application and thought, yeah, let's get...
This guy's going to be someone. That's exactly. No, they didn't. No, it was good. Like I say, it's a weird thing. I think, like, when I've spoken to people about wanting to join the police as well since, I think, like, it's a kind of job where you've got to really want it. You can't just kind of think, oh, I might do that, because I think you won't put the effort into that application and you won't get past that kind of that stage. And then when you have to turn up and you do interview and you do other little bits and pieces, unless you really want it, I just don't think you'll get the job, to be brutally honest. But, yeah.
Where do you do the training? Is it a place called Stamford?
No, there's, to be fair, so different forces. I work for the British Transport Police.
Right.
The Metropolitan Police have, I think they still do certain things at Hendon. I know they've got a training place in Sidcup as well. Because I'd nearly joined Kent Police as well. I'd applied for them at the same time. And the only reason I didn't join them was because there was more money, basically, for working in London.
Yeah.
But, their training school's in, like, they've got a place in Maidstone. So it just depends. There's different forces have different places. I got trained in, like, Highbury in Islington.
Is it like a police academy?
do you know what? It's not, but it was, like, I really enjoyed
it. Cool,
I really enjoyed it.
Did they teach you loads of cool shit?
I mean, it's It's probably quite nerdy when you when you're learning all this.
I can just imagine Lauren would fucking love it.
When you're learning legislation, I remember you're coming out and you're like,
all the dry
going
stuff.
Up to people, I'm like, oh, blah, 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 that section, whatever. And because it's really fresh in your head, so you would it's stuff that I wouldn't remember now.
Yeah.
But knowing legislation, and I imagine some of my friends, I probably looked a bit like a nerd, or my friends that weren't police officers, they were like, what's happened to Leon? But
yeah.
But it's really enjoyable, and I'm still really good friends with certain people from my intake, still in contact with most of the people from my intake as well. We had a really good group, had a good trainer as well, so as much as it wasn't police academy, it was really I really enjoyed it, I really did.
And yeah.
Yeah, I think, I always look back at things like that, and I think I was quite lucky. I was lucky with who I was with, I was lucky with who I got trained by, because, it wouldn't have taken much for that to be a completely different experience as well, so. But yeah, thankfully it seemed to go all right, and I got through it well, so.
Oh, cool. Yeah. It does sound fun, actually, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
It's so much fun.
Apart from all the reading and, learning of the law and stuff.
I wouldn't want to sit through it again. There's a lot of PowerPoints, there's a lot of writing. We had to do parade as well, so there's a lot of polishing your boots and stuff.
Is there?
Yeah, making sure your uniform's all nice and tidy. But
did you play your part at the recent coronation?
Oh yeah. I like the way I sort of sighed. It was I only sighed because we had a really long night. So I work on a public order unit, and we kind of have a lot of little specialist skills with us, and one of them is search. So myself and my team and my colleagues, we were tasked with going out to basically where a lot of the troops were staying, and we had to be really hush-hush about it as well, about what we're doing, because it's such a kind of security threat as well. So we couldn't even tell people about what we were doing and where we were going and all that. And basically, it was just we were searching around where the troops were going to be coming through, and then where they were travelling into London, and a lot of us were kind of dotted around other locations as well. I think I know some people were out in Tring, because I think that's where the Navy come through. And yeah, so it's quite cool, I guess, to be involved in something like that. But like I say, I was doing a night shift, and we were on from 9 p.m. till 9 a.m. And I was very tired. And I still went out the next day, which was probably a bit silly. But we won't talk about that. Probably because I don't remember much of it. But yeah, but it was cool. It was cool to be involved in that. It was, it's an honour.
It's special, isn't
it? It's not what we do every day. So so it was quite. I just wish it wasn't a night shift.
No.
I don't do well with nights. I just don't do them enough anymore. So,
one in my lifetime.
Horrendous.
One night shift. I got to 12 o'clock at night, cried my eyes out, find somewhere to hide and fell asleep.
I've pretty much done the same.
I couldn't handle it. I'm not a night person.
It was horrible. And we had such strict times on doing stuff as well, where you had to do this and you had to be there, and then that train has to go somewhere and you have to see. And it was just like, oh my God. Mm. And then you have little downtimes in between. It's like, oh, I'm just running on sugar and it's not going to go well. But
a lot of coffee that night then, I suppose.
A lot of coffee, a lot of energy drinks, a lot of, a lot of sugar. There were sweets and chocolate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Everything.
It's like a kid's party. It was great, really. I was just too tired to appreciate it.
Playing a pop in the pocket.
I wish, honestly. That would have just capped it off. Then I would have been happy.
Yeah. Well, we know what to send him next time.
Yeah. What those things called? Rainbow drops. Bouncing off the ceiling.
So, are you ready for your questions?
Oh God, it's like interview again now, isn't it?
Let's
ready?
Go.
I'm just meant to be the other way around. I'm supposed to be asking the questions. Yeah.
So, can you tell us your most interesting crime or serial killer?
I feel like I'm like, no, I can't tell you that. Serial killers. Off the top of my head, I can't remember anything massively. Obviously, we've had the whole Jeffrey Dahmer stuff that's been on Netflix and recently, and that was really interesting. I'm kind of weird because, crime, and it's more often than not, in America, that stuff really fascinates me. And I'm house-sitting at the moment, and the guy I'm house-sitting for is massively into it, and he's got, books on serial killers and stuff. And I was flicking through it the other day, is he's got, what's the guy's name? Is it Ed Gein? I can't remember how you say his surname. And he's got this book that is the full transcript of his confession. And I was just sort of flicking through. I find it's really fascinating just to be how someone's mind works. I just find kind of all those types of things very interesting. Let me check my notes. What did I write down? So one thing that I would have mentioned probably before as well, which isn't a serial killer, but as a crime, like I remember the Dunblane thing really well.
Yeah.
Because that was when I was at school and I remember how much it changed, like the security we had at school. So when I was there, technically, you probably could have basically walked in off the street because the doors wouldn't have been locked and stuff like that. And it was just little things like the fact that they, I think they started locking the playground gates unless it was kind of home time or whatever else, because they definitely wanted to get rid of us then. But,
kick you out.
Yeah. Not me, I was a great kid. They, I hope that Leon stays, he's a great lad. But yeah, stuff like that. And like I say, in the internal doors even, there was, yeah, it was kind of, they were magnetic locks basically, so you couldn't just walk in. So that really stuck with me, just because I guess I was like at that age where it was like, oh, this. It's, I don't know. Like I say, it's not that it affected me, and I didn't. I was too young, I guess, to really think about it. But it's just one of those things that, even when I grew up, and when like, we're going to break the fourth wall here. But you know, like when you sent me the questions, that was one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, that's kind of stuck with me a little bit, and just yeah,
because I didn't realize I left school like long before you did, because I'm much
not
older than you.
No, I don't believe you.
Because when I was at school, everything was open, you could walk into the school from the playing field, and I dropped my daughter there the other day actually, and I said, and there's massive like spiked fence all around it now, and locked gates, and I said, we used to walk to school through there, that's, and there was no gates at all. And like when I used to take my kids to school, the first time I went to go in, I just went to walk in, and it was locked, and that's the first I knew of it, because I'd already left school when Dunblane happened.
It's
so
crazy though, isn't it? Like you, I think with a lot of things, like especially with like security anyway, you look back at sort of probably even like 10 years ago and it's going to be so different 10 years ago to how things are done now, just because of the way the world's changed, unfortunately. But
yeah, they have to respond, don't they, to thank God we live in a country where they do respond, because you've got to feel for their American parents.
Oh, 100%.
Well,
sending their kids in with their bulletproof backpacks and stuff.
There was the Christian school recently. That was just horrendous. Like, I
there's,
can't.
There's something all the time, isn't there, Leon? It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, what is it? Actually, that's just one that's was sprung to mind first. But I think that was just sprung to mind because I remember those body worn of like the officers that went in and obviously took out the attacker. And it's not often I watch something like it sounds like because of my job, but it's not often I watch something and I'm like, Jesus, that's horrific. But that was one of those things. I'm like, that's a bad day at work. Like that's horrible.
Yeah, that's true.
And as a parent as well, like, just, kids is out of bounds for stuff like that for me. Like, that's a completely... Not that anyone is appropriate, but, like, kids, I just... I don't get it.
No.
I don't know how you could do that. I really don't. Just horrible.
Yeah, absolutely. That was shocking, though, that case, wasn't it? That Dunblane case. And I know there was... I remember there was a similar incident not very long after, and in a nursery school, but the attacker... He could only arm himself with a knife, so he could only do so much damage with it. And I think at that point, people were drawing comparisons with Dunblane and saying, thank God we tightened our gun laws when we did, because if he had been able to get a gun, which he would have a few years ago, this would be another Dunblane.
Oh,
But I think it was just injuries, just knife wounds and stuff. And I say just in
it's
a way.
Still terrible, it's, but it can always be worse. Unfortunately, with any, like... horrible incidents, they can always be worse. Like, it's not much of a positive spin, but
no, I know you got to see it as
but
a
got to grasp at something, haven't you?
Yeah.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I remember the Soham murders as well. That was Ian Huntley.
Yeah.
Ooh. I really remember that because I think I was roughly, again, I think I was around 11 maybe then. And it was just when I was, I think the girls might have been a bit younger, I can't remember.
But they were 9, I think.
Yeah, it was just when I was kind of at that age where you, I guess you start to understand things and like, I just remember... Just remember all of, like, the press conferences and stuff, and like obviously he had done stuff in the media, you know, willing them to come back despite knowing what he'd done anyway.
Yeah,
and it was just I remember there was a football game on the day that they had I remember where I was when you found out they had died and stuff, and it was just like Jesus.
It's a scary one, isn't it? Because like you're a similar age, and it's that sort of age where as a parent you start to give your kids that little tiny bit of independence.
Yeah,
but it's
exactly.
Like, all right, you can go to the shop, come straight back. Or
especially
you're with your mate.
You've got your friend with you, exactly.
All right, come back within an hour or something, which is which was about as much independence as them girls have got at age 9, and at age 11 you probably didn't have a lot more. You probably were still like, you know, mum, can
I run in that household? Don't you worry.
But yeah, but it's just one of them things. As a mum, you've just got to take a deep breath and think, I'm not going to be one of them.
Yeah,
you know, I've got to let you know. Most kids are fine.
That's it. Unfortunately,
yeah.
It's the same as when I used to be scared of flying. You just go, well, most planes crash, so it's gonna be. Hopefully, we won't be the bad luck one, but.
It's true, though. You can't live your life thinking the worst's going to happen. Otherwise, you'll just...
Nah.
Never live, won't you?
Nah,
yeah,
exactly. That's it.
You've got to live. But, that's the Soham murders were big news, weren't they, in this country?
Yeah, I remember that one as well.
It's just crazy. It's just horrible. But.
Yeah. Would you ever consider going into, like, the detective area of the job?
I would never say never. Like, I really enjoy what I do at the moment, like the public order. I think it's just because I'm at the right age. I'm quite fit. I can kind of do what I'm required to do. But, you know, I still look at this job. I want this to be my job till I retire. Easier said than done, but you never know. And certainly going into kind of investigative stuff.
I do that all the time.
That's impressive. But yeah, certainly going into kind of that, going down that avenue and going down that route, like, it's not something I'd rule out. Like, when I was still, like, on response work and kind of having to go and do interviews, I got to do, like, a next-level-up training course on, like, interviewing suspects. And I found that really interesting. So, yeah, it's not something I want to do now because I don't like paperwork and I don't like sitting behind a desk and doing the admin. But, like I say, I think at some point I'm not going to want to be running around trying to catch bad people all the time and get a bit pretending to be roughy tufty. So yeah, maybe that'll be for me then.
If you ever need a Watson, I'm out.
There you go. I'll bring any paper up. Like,
yeah, let's do it.
Anything, as long as we can be involved.
As long as you're not expecting a cut of my wage.
No, it's fine. We're volunteers, and Lauren's already solved about 3 crimes anyway. Like,
I know this actually. Yeah, I do like your little. Right, well, I think this is what happened. Like, oh, okay.
I think you solved Jack the Ripper, the Zodiac.
Yeah,
I know.
And there's another one.
The buried treasure.
Where Where were you when we needed you? Honestly.
If I was falling around that age, I'd have been laughing. Listen.
I'll put in a good word for you when I get back. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, do you know what? I didn't consider the fact of, like, how old or young you are as to what kind of job role you want to have in the police. But, yeah, that's a really good point. I suppose the young, fit people want to be out and getting stuck in. And
some people, like, there are people that even I join with. There's a lad I join with who pretty much from day one said, like, I want to go down that detective kind of route, and he probably isn't much older than me, but that was what he wanted to do. And, like, fair play, if you know what you want to do, then crack on. But I feel like I've been quite lucky. I've already been around a few different areas of, like, policing. So I've done, like, the kind of neighbourhood sort of thing, then I've done response, and now I'm doing, like, public order. So it's good,
varied, isn't it? Don't get bored.
Exactly. Well, I think that's important. I think it's exactly that. It just keeps it fresh. And if I had just stayed at one place, what I've been in 8 years now, I imagine I'd be bored and probably not even be in a job anymore, because I've got to do something else.
You get demotivated, wouldn't you?
But I guess it's kind of a unique, being in the police is a bit unique in that sense of it's not the same thing. It's not the same thing every day anyway.
No.
But also there are then different areas you can go and kind of do stuff in. So,
And that's encouraged, is it?
Yeah. I've been really lucky. Like, it's your supervisors that, you know, support your mood and support you doing training and stuff like that.
Mm.
And I've had really good supervisors that have been, you know, supportive of me when I'm guessing I've done enough to at least get their back in. But yeah, they've always been really supportive of me and what I want to do. So yeah.
Cool. So are you ready for another question?
Oh, come on.
Mr. McLeod?
Go on then.
Sorry.
Constable McLeod.
Sorry. Is it MBE or...?
No, we're not doing this. No.
Oh, well, I'm going to stop now.
I forgot the bell when you walked in.
Fuck off.
Did you just say bell?
You absolute... See, this is what I get at work. This is my day off as well. And I'm getting a stick that I get at work. This is not all right. This is not all right.
It's how we show affection, by being piss takers.
No, someone did say it to me once. Oh, we're taking a mick out of it. It means we like you. It's like, nah. That's not
it's not terms of endearment.
No.
Right, Leon, would you like to tell our lovely listeners a crime that no one's ever heard of?
Please? Oh, God. what have I got written down? No one's heard of. Well, right. There's a lot of stuff. So, like, I know even a couple of days ago, we had to go on... Well, some of my colleagues, I didn't end up going, but my team went to do, like, it was involved in, like, a rapid entry, which is in relation to a serious offence. You know, you're going in there for fairly serious.
Is that where they get a batting ram and they'll just go, like, go?
Pretty much, yeah. There's different exciting forms. But, like, yeah, going in, getting the big red key is... Some people simply call it, but it's like an enforcer, and and doing that, and it's really hard because I can't say anything about it. But we do a lot of that sort of stuff where you've got jobs that you can't particularly talk about, and it's kind of like when I said about the stuff we're doing for the coronation. Before that, we were kind of, it was very like hush hush. You can't say where we're going, what time we're going to be there. Couldn't put anything on social media, so. I've got loads of jobs that I no one knows about.
True.
But I can't tell you still, because that would be silly. But I haven't really got a great answer for that, other than it's just I get to do kind of fun stuff, but I can't tell you about it.
Nice. Fair enough.
Cliffhanger.
Yeah,
I like that one.
I don't know. Soz.
To be part of that go tech, my nerves are on edge even when you've done that. I don't think I could handle
it's
that
really
very
cool.
Well.
It's like, there's a lot of safety checks, and like, obviously it's way above my head anyway, but you have to get authority to go and do them anyway. Like, there's a lot of risk assessments done because, you know, if there's kids in an address as well, you've got to take that into consideration.
Yeah.
And just things like that. So it's fun. It's weird because, like, the first one I'd done, hadn't been on this unit for very long, and I was like, that was proper, like, the adrenaline was going. I was like, Jesus Christ, what the hell am I going to run into? But thankfully, I've done quite a few now, and they've all been safe and... It sounds sad now because I'm like, I don't have that same like, oh, this is really exciting anymore. But I think it's good anyway, because it's the sort of thing when we're doing it, it's because it looks like it's for something quite serious. So it's not every day that you're doing my job and you're like, oh, I'm making a huge difference to the world.
Yeah. Mm.
But when you're going in and you know it's for something like that, for it to be to arrest somebody or to, you know, carry out a search and stuff, that's where you're like, okay, this is important, and you do feel like you're making a bit more of a difference. It's a good job. That's like, yeah, that's one of those. The only thing is you have to normally wake up really early for it. So again, it's like, I just want to, I need sleep. Like, I'm not young anymore. I need sleep. It's important.
Yeah.
Is that when the application to detective is going to come along when you do one too many night shifts
exactly
or early
that
starts or something?
But then the thing is, if I do then go down that avenue, I probably will have to do more night shifts.
You probably have more, yeah.
But then I might be able to find a little sleepy corner in the office.
Yeah, you might have your own office with a comfy chair.
Leave the phone off the hook and turn the radio
ring
down.
Us. You do our
That's
job.
There you go. Perfect. All right, done.
Done.
Wake me up if you need something. Yeah. Don't get yourself in trouble. Sorry, are you volunteering to do night shifts? Jesus.
Yeah. I'm that desperate at the minute, yeah.
Sold. Absolutely sold.
Oh, so can you tell us some true crime recommendations?
Oh, in what sense?
TV, podcasts,
TV stuff. So
books.
Oh, well, like I say, this that Ed Gaines book I read the other day, that was... It was really annoying because I was like... I think I was just basically getting ready to go to bed. I was like, this is interesting. And I was sort of just flicking through it and then just reading it. I was like, I want to read this all now. And there was another one there, but I can't remember what it was. But TV-wise, I've always said 24 Hours in Police Custody is really good. Like, yeah. It's really... It's just very good at showing you how kind of things go from A to Z. And it's kind of simplified as well, because like if you just watched it and I'm like, you know, the people in it, if they just done their job and didn't really explain things, the amount of time you'd be sitting, well, the public would be sitting there watching it and be like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
But I like that it's not even dumbed down, so it's not like I'm watching it going, oh god, why are you like, this is annoying. It's just sort of simplified for people to understand it, so I really like that. And I like that when it first started, it was just really kind of low-level cases that probably didn't take long to go, this is what's happened, this is who done it, he then got charged, and he's, you know, what the outcome is X. Whereas now there's kind of been more prolonged investigations, and I think that's just... I find that quite interesting, because it's not... Yeah. I'm not involved in that kind of prolonged investigation side. We might go and put the door in when they get a suspect or whatever, but, I don't get to see that. So even for me, it's quite like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And just, I guess, to some extent, seeing the way the mind of an investigator works as well. Like, it is, it's interesting even as a police officer to see that. So 24 Hours in Police Custody is, like, in terms of true, real-life crimes, yeah. I think that's really good. away from not, like, real, Line of Duty was really good as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I did good. Like that. As much as it was professional standards in policing, which... You know, we won't go there. But it was, that is good. And I think it doesn't pretend to be too much glitzy and glamoury either. I think it's kind of shows that there's a lot of boring paperwork almost. Much like, what is it? Hot Fuzz. Much like Hot Fuzz.
Oh, yes.
We'll crack the case and now back to do the paperwork.
Yeah. Right.
There you go. That's a great film about crime as well.
Yeah, go and have a cool netto.
Yeah, exactly. But, I can't think off the top of my head anything else now.
That 24 Hours in Custody, it's one of those ones where... Is it where they wear the body camera and then they show
It normally
them doing...
does, yeah. Like, they've shown... going in and arresting people when they've got and I think that's really interesting as well, because like again the public don't generally get to see that.
There was we had a guest on before, didn't we, and she was talking about there was a really interesting case. These two sisters, they kept running into the road and trying to get run over,
right?
And it's quite a famous case, and that was actually in one of those TV programmes. Oh. It was just a fluke, but the camera crew were with them on the day that they got called out
traffic,
to this incident.
Traffic, wasn't it? Traffic police.
Traffic something. Police, yeah.
I normally hate that programme.
Yeah.
I normally hate the traffic and like police interceptors.
Yeah,
that's it.
The amount of times I've walked into a mess room in a police station and that's on, I'm like, nah.
Really? What, they watch it, do they, in the mess
room? It's so cheesy. I can't, like...
Is it just too cringe for words?
It's just, listen, it's just not me. It's not how I am as a police officer. It's just a bit too, like, oh.
Why is it cheesy? Is it because they were, like, in their cars acting all hard and stuff?
It's just traffic. Like, traffic cops are just they're a bit of a different breed. You know, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing. They're just a different breed, and it takes a certain kind of person to want to be a traffic officer. and that is not me.
No, oh, fair enough.
And like I say, I'm not saying it's good or a bad thing. Yeah. Just not for me. Yeah, that is on. Oh, God, geez, it's on all the time.
Are they the ones that do car chases? Is that the traffic police?
Yeah, a lot of them are. I think sometimes it's more boring stuff that they show, but, like, yeah, they get to do. Which, again, that is quite... It's a cool job. Like,
yeah.
I'd love to do it, but...
It is.
It's just the other stuff. And, yeah.
Off subject.
Yeah.
Have you seen The Jury yet?
No.
Yeah, highly recommend. I've just finished watching it.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody in this, they're going on a trial. They're all jurors. Everybody, judge, police, officer, right. American.
Yeah.
Are all actors other than one guy.
Mm.
And this one guy thinks the whole thing's happening and it's all real.
He thinks he's been called up for a genuine jury service, but he's actually not.
So everyone else around him knows, like, and they all act a bit funky. And there's random scenes, but he's genius because he honestly believes it's all happening and unfolding in front of him.
Yeah.
You've got to watch it. He's perfect. Perfect TV.
That sounds funny.
Have you ever done jury service?
No, I haven't.
I've done it twice.
Have you?
I feel quite lucky. So the first time I've done it was before I was a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
And, like I say, that was when I was doing my application, actually. And that was just... It was really interesting. It was in a London Crown Court, and...
Ooh.
It was just quite interesting to see how that stuff all worked. Because I wouldn't... But again, it was before I was in a job, so I didn't know how that kind of a courtroom looks or anything like that. And then I've done it once, probably about a year after I joined the police as well. So it was really, really early on. And it was quite funny to see how my mindset had changed, like, on that level of suspicion and, like, from finding someone guilty, because at that point I knew how hard it was to get a job to court, and I'm like, if this has got to court, you have almost certainly done it. Like, it's like, yeah.
This is going to lessen my chances with a job with you, but
go on.
Channel 4 did a live jury thing, and, at home were the jurors, and at the end you had to make your mind up.
Yeah.
And I was convinced... of the wrong answer, either did it or he didn't do it. I was convinced, and when they told us the actual what happened, I was like, "That's it, it's fixed. I'm not watching it no more."
To be fair, in your defence, you get there's so much information that is when you're in a jury, and you are sitting through every single little second of it, and you're discussing it as a group. So, but you didn't get to do that when you sat at home. So, no, it's not your fault. It's the television's fault. Yeah,
I believe you.
There you go. So you're back on board.
I'm back on board now.
My Watson is back.
There we go.
Oh, I love it. I think this is our last question, probably. Have you got any local crimes or anything that you would like to talk about?
Local crimes. I'm trying to think. There was something that popped into my head earlier, and it was kind of off the back of when you were saying stuff that people don't know about, but I can't remember what it was now, and that's going to bug me.
I know when you came on before, because unfortunately we'd lost the first recording, didn't we?
Yeah, you did.
You mentioned...
It's your husband's fault, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You just said that really aggressively.
I felt that.
Oh, that guy.
We hate that guy.
Yeah.
Let's all go out for dinner without him.
Oh, can we?
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
You were called out to a fella who had a baby.
Yes, so that was when I still would have been on response, and basically when I can't remember what the, I think the call's for somebody who was like essentially like a trespass. So because we paced the railway, if you're on the tracks, that's trespass. So it's like, yeah. So I think initially that's what it came out as. So I ran to the call. I think I was like the second unit to arrive, and I don't know where everyone's going to be listening to this from, but you have like this, the DLR trains. It was one of those tracks. So they're not electric. I should know this more.
They don't have a driver, do they?
Yeah, they're like, driverless, like and he wasn't like in train. He wasn't touching a live rail or anything like that. So it was, but he was kind of behaving erratically. Is probably the only way I could describe it. He was kind of just moving weird. I don't really know what to say. So one of my colleagues basically made a decision that he was going to get him off the track in case a train come in and it didn't stop. I don't know how possible that would have been, but, you know, trying to avoid the situation getting any worse. And he got this guy back up, got him onto the platform, and he was just really... He wasn't particularly fighting against us, I wouldn't say, but he was just really resisting and just... It was really odd. He was speaking... Like, he was making noise, but it wasn't words. It was just kind of... garbled nonsense, essentially. And again, initially, I could say I didn't recognise it as anything. I just thought he's having a bit of an episode, maybe taking an overdose or something, and it's just reacted, but not even an overdose, reacted badly to something he's taken. And it was only after a while that I remember I touched his, like, I think I was on his near his head, and we were kind of trying to stop him. Just he was seemed quite happy laying down, but we didn't obviously want him to roll back on the tracks. So we were just trying to hold him in place, essentially. And he was drenched. He was absolutely drenched. It was one of those things where I've dealt with so many medical things and whatever else, but I was like, that's a bit weird. And eventually, there's more officers have kind of arrived. Someone's like, do you think it's like ABD, which is like acute behavioural disorder?
Right.
And it can stem from drugs. It can stem from like banging your head and stuff like that.
Wow.
And I'd never seen it before, so I didn't recognise it. And when he said it, I was like, ah. And that is very much like a medical emergency when it's that.
Wow.
So I think we had called an ambulance anyway, because it clearly wasn't, you know, it was a medical issue. But like with acute behavioural disorder, the way it's been described before is because of the way that person is fighting and everything else is going. It's basically like driving a car at 60 miles an hour in first gear.
Wow.
And the pressure that can put on their heart and stuff. And
oh,
so,
God.
So thankfully, we got medical... Yeah, a paramedic arrived pretty early on. And an ambulance came as well. And, yeah, I mean, I don't really know what the outcome of him was. He was definitely alive when he left, and he was still kind of as he had been. But it was just, yeah, that was that was something I'd never seen before. Haven't seen since, I've been in 8 years now. That was probably, I'd probably been in 3-4 years when that happened.
It's quite rare, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if it hit his head. I still don't know what it was that kind of brought that out of him, but yeah.
It must be so scary to be in that situation where you don't know how to respond because this person's behaving so erratically.
Yeah, we get a lot of training in it because, you know, we get a lot of training. We're taught a lot. And it's more because of what's happened in America, you know, with like George Floyd and restraining people and stuff like that, and how to do it and how clearly not to do it. And so with that, and because there's a massive thing as well about like positional asphyxia in the police. And again, thankfully, I mean, I don't really know of any case of it in the UK. Certainly hasn't happened with any of me or my colleagues. But if you've got someone cuffed up and you leave them on their front, the pressure on their chest can... You know, it can do serious harm, especially if they're quite a big built person. And so we do get a lot of training in that, because it's so important to know or recognise or be able to recognise how quickly something can go from being a criminal thing. Like I say, so if you've handcuffed somebody because they've done something wrong and you've struggled with them and you've left them on the floor, like, that can really quickly then become a medical emergency. And so we have to be aware of that. And that's what I mean with, like, ABD. Although I hadn't seen it before, I, at least, even I was like, something's not quite right. And again, it's that thing of, like, knowing, although you don't know what to do, and you could tell that it's not a criminal thing. Him being on the tracks and doing whatever he was doing, that's not just a normal behaviour of someone that's a criminal. And so you're kind of going, well, we need an ambulance because this isn't my remit. Mm-hmm. It's a weird day at work, but I think we kind of done all right. We've done the right thing, got an ambulance, pass it over to somebody that knows what they're doing, because that ain't for me. But we get, that's just the kind of the job we do. You end up dealing with stuff like out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when I was on before, that wasn't that long after I dealt with the child that someone had come up to us. I'll explain the story rather than just, I just realised I'm kind of shorthanding it for you guys. So we were patrolling in an area because there'd been an attempt murder, and we were patrolling for this suspect. And basically at the time, I was on the van having a little break with two other colleagues, I think. And then basically someone's come running up to the van, and it was like just this random member of the public, and then followed by my colleagues. I was like, what's going on here? And a colleague's just like, there's a child not breathing at this address. It's like, oh. I was like, okay, this is what? And basically this member of the public had approached my colleagues who had been out and about, and he'd had a phone call from his mother who was looking after, you know, his kids, and she had rung him to say, like, kid's not breathing. So I think he'd called the ambulance, I'm not even sure. And then bumps into my colleagues, and obviously blah, blah, blah. So this address was, I can't remember how much it showed up, but we weren't far away, so it was like, right, we'll go there, because we can at least try to do the first aid stuff that we're taught. We carry defibrillators as well, so it's, you know, better than nothing. So we've gone racing to this address. I don't really know how, not that I'm complaining, but I have ended up being the... by the door of this van, so it's like, right, I'm getting off first, clearly. I had the defib with me, so it's all right. And so as we were travelling, I know, like, I'm very aware of how, you know, the ambulance service categorise calls, and like a child not breathing or anything like that is going to be high category. So I was in the back of my head, I was thinking, we're gonna get there, and the ambulance will be there anyway, and it would be fine. And then like I say, I think it took us about probably 5 minutes or so. We pulled into this road, and there was no blue lights, and honestly, my heart sunk a bit, because I was like, fuck, like, this is on us then, right, okay. So we pulled up to this address, and I literally said to the guys we were getting, I was like, just get us in, get us into the room, get us to where he is. So we go charging in, and I remember, I think I probably would have said it at the time, but I remember my first thought is, I've looked at his kids, the nan had him in her arms, and he wasn't, like, grey. He looked alive still. Mm-hmm. Wasn't grey, wasn't, like, blue. So I was like, right, something's on our side at least. So I kind of abruptly grabbed him off her to put him on the floor, because, again, if you're gonna need to do CPR or anything like that, doing it on a bed is not going to work, so blah, blah, blah. And, like, as I grabbed him, he, like, gasped. And that was when it's like, right, okay.
Yeah.
You're like, it was.
I expect you gasped too. I did.
I remember going, right, you're breathing as well now. So this is positive.
Yeah.
And then we just made a decision. Like, I remember we put him on the floor, trying to rouse him, wasn't getting much. It was like, right, let's just get him on our carrier, get him to hospital. And we'd done that. So I didn't have to carry him far. I literally just picked him up, carried him out of the house, passed him up to colleagues. And then we just, blue lit to... God, I don't even remember where we were. I don't even remember what the hospital would have been. and got into hospital, handed him over to nurses, and then come away. And that was one of the few times that I've, like, properly dealt with something, and then when I've taken a step back, been like, whoa, and had that adrenaline dump of, like, oh my God, that was... that was pretty crazy.
Yeah,
so,
I bet you did.
Yeah, that was... Wow. Yeah. I don't know. I think he'd taken an overdose, like, or something.
God.
Like, yes.
Oh, love
he was
him.
Only, I think, like, 12 years old.
Oh, but, God.
Oh, yeah. Poor little kid.
Sorry. Yeah, but he was alive and he was in hospital,
yeah.
So
yeah.
He would have been okay. And then we got a... I think someone, I can't remember who it was, but someone got like an email from his dad saying like he's all right and thanking us for the effort. So.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's lovely that you find out what happened to him afterwards.
But that's,
yeah.
That's the wonderful world of policing. Like I say, the amount of time you do stuff, especially when I used to be on response, the amount of time you end up dealing with something that's not, you know, crime related, there's a lot of like social, you feel like a social service worker because you're dealing with like MISPers and vulnerable kids, vulnerable adults, like that happens a lot. Mm-hmm.
Does it?
Yeah, they're just really drawn, like, they seem to be drawn to kind of the railway a lot as well.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, like, I guess to some extent it's because it's a dry, kind of safe environment a lot of the time.
Yeah, I suppose so.
And, you know, to be fair, a lot of RAL staff are trained to be aware, and they would be, but they're very aware of, like, oh, that person's been sat there, haven't gotten a train for however long, like.
Mm.
And more often than not, we'll get called because it's, I mean, it's one of those things where there are gaps almost, I think, when people, I know there's people talk about defunding the police and all that stuff, but it's like there are gaps in kind of areas. And when you've got somebody that's a vulnerable person, I can see why, like, calling the police isn't the right thing for them, calling an ambulance isn't necessarily the right thing for them, but there are just gaps in that kind of network of what we can and can't do, really. So
yeah, you have to step in and overlap it a little bit.
Yeah, and like I say, that was, there's a lot of that in policing, a lot of dealing with suicidal, vulnerable people, and just
I suppose
people,
you're
just
right,
people having a bad day as well sometimes.
It's true. It's not all about getting medals off the crane, is it?
Oh, thank God you said that, because I was thinking, Christ, we're going to end this on a really bum note. Suicide stuff. And then you just dug me out. So, yeah, thanks for that. Yeah,
that's all right. Anytime. Please let me know, Nick, if you are, you know, feeling a bit too good about yourself. Me and Lauren can
rectify. My skipper brings me down as well. We literally joke about it. He's like, I can't big you up too much. He's very good at just being like, no, you're an
excellent
idiot.
Oh, yeah. Cool. See? Just
lucky me.
Yeah. Well...
me and my great team.
Well, I think that just about wraps it up. So,
sure does.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
We really appreciate you coming back.
Sorry
after
that I forgot all the great stories I told you before, but you know.
No, some new ones, and those ones as well. So, yeah. Thanks.
You've got two sidekicks there, sir.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
You've got some helpers.
Lucky me.
Willing helpers.
Lucky me.
If you can put up with the piss taking,
Oh, jeez. I already have to. It's fine.
Well, thank you for listening, everybody. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next time. Thank you, Leon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.